book of Malachi this evening. My goal tonight is to kind of introduce this book, whet your appetite for this book. Let me encourage you, don't just depend upon what happens here. What do I mean by that? You know, if you come here on a Wednesday night and you're kind of cold to what we're going to be studying, by that I mean not that you're disinterested, but that this is the first time you're hearing anything about it, the first time you're reading anything about it, it's not likely going to really have the full impact in your life that it could. I want to encourage you to be reading through this book on a regular basis. Perhaps, and this is the way I like to read a short book like this, where you can sit down and read through it from Malachi 1:1 to the end of the book. And the idea is that you're just reading it and reading it and reading it and reading it and reading it. And I would encourage you, maybe get a tablet beside you, that you could write some questions that might come up. Or maybe some thoughts or comments that the Lord impresses upon you as you're reading through the book. And it may be, hopefully, as we work our way through this section, Brother Andy and Brother Todd are going to help me. We have kind of a rotation that we're going here. It'll be through the month of June and July, and we should be able to finish it by the end of July. But hopefully we'll answer your questions. If not, if someone's preaching on a passage, you guys will love me for this. If someone's preaching on a passage that you have a question about, then go up to that person and ask him that question and see if he can answer it. We really want to thoroughly digest this book, get a good understanding of what it's talking about, and also of how it might apply to our lives here in the time period that we live in. I tonight am trying to just help you get a framework, a handle. Sometimes when you study these Old Testament books, unless you go into the history, a little bit in the history of what's happening and the background and all of that, then the books really don't have as much meaning to you. So you need kind of a setting, if you would. Think of it like a ring, ladies. You know, when you get a ring and that Mr. Wonderful comes along and you're so excited about the fact that he's in your life and you're sort of anticipating the fact that one of these days he's going to do what we call pop the question, you know. And you think you've got it all figured out. It's going to be around Christmas time. It has to be around Christmas time, you know. And so you're all excited and maybe you've visited his family and he's visited your family and all the anticipation and all that would happen. And then finally he comes to the point where he asks you, you know, would you marry me? And he's prepared. And of course you say, yes. I mean, you've been waiting for this for a long time now. And then he reaches in his pocket and he pulls out a diamond and gives you the diamond. And you kind of look at it and think, okay, what am I going to do with this? You know, you can't put it on. It's just a diamond. A diamond doesn't have as much meaning or function. You're limited as to what you can do unless it has a setting where it's placed in something that will sort of distribute or show off its beauty, so to speak. Well, the same thing happens with some of these books. If we don't have a little bit of the setting, the background, the understanding and all of that, when we come to the richness that's here and the riches that are here, it doesn't have as much meaning. It doesn't seem to connect as well with us. And so I want to kind of give it some connection tonight if I can. First of all, I'll talk a little bit about the historical background and the date of the book. There are three what we call post-exilic books. And they are Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Now, by post-exilic, we mean post, the idea of after exile or exilic, after the exile. There are different periods of history in the nation of Israel. Some of them are pre-exilic, that is, they occur before the exile. Some of them are exilic, that is, they occur during the exile. These happen to be, Malachi particularly, has to be a post-exilic book. When you begin studying the history of Israel and how the Lord worked, there were actually several exiles. That is, there were several times when the children of Israel were taken out of Palestine or out of Israel and taken to a foreign land. You also find when you begin studying historically, there were actually three returns, and I've listed them for you here. First one in 538 B.C., when a group of people came back. That's told. We learn about that in Ezra chapter 1 and verse 1. Then there's another one in 458 B.C., which is about 80 years later, where Ezra himself led a second return. You find out about that in Ezra chapter 7. And then the third one was around, these are approximate dates, 445, 444 B.C., that was led by Nehemiah. So all of these exiles have happened, and all of the returns have happened. And now what's happening is these prophets are ministering during this post-exilic period. If you study, we won't do that tonight by any means, but if you study the Haggai and Zechariah, they actually ministered a little bit earlier than Malachi. And a lot of their emphasis had to do with the temple, particularly Haggai. If you remember that little book, the people had kind of gotten back into the land. They had laid the foundation for the altar. They had begun to worship again. They had laid the foundation for the temple. And then they had gotten distracted by all the other things that were going on in their lives. And the temple had not really been built. And so the Lord raises up Haggai and Zechariah, who ministered. They were contemporaries. They ministered at the same time. And particularly their emphasis was restoring the worship, the temple, rebuilding the temple. And all of that had taken place by this point. Malachi comes along a little bit later than those earlier two. And so he's ministering even later than that, really about 100 years after the return, or what we might call the final return. That's when Malachi is ministering. Now, we don't really have a date. If you look at other books, it's not uncommon to say in the year of King so-and-so, in the month of so-and-so, in the day of so-and-so, the word of the Lord came unto whatever the prophet's name is, and he ministers. We don't have that in Malachi. In fact, if you want to look in chapter 1, verse 1, this is really the only superscription or introduction, if you would, of the book. The burden of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi. That's it. And we're going to come back to that as we end tonight. But that's it. We don't have any date telling us exactly when the book was written or what by what king or what month or all the other kind of things that we often have with other prophets. But we do have some data within the book that helps us at least assign what we might call a general date for the book. For example, he refers to the governor, and the term that he uses is a Persian governor. So we know that it's during the time, if you remember, the Assyrians were the one that took captive Israel, and then later on the Babylonians came along, and then after that the Persians came along. It was a Medo-Persian empire that later primarily became a Persian empire. And so the term governor is a Persian term. So that kind of helps us date the book a little bit. Also, in this section, we have the fact that they were offering sacrifices at the temple. Well, we know from other passages and other history that the temple was rebuilt about 516 B.C. So it has to be after that. And then probably one of the things that helps us the most in this book is that many of the sins or problems or issues that are being addressed in the book of Malachi were the same kind of problems that were occurring in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, which would date us closer to the ministries of Ezra and Nehemiah. And writers sort of speculate, well, when did Malachi come on the scene, and was Nehemiah still active? If you remember, there had been a period of time where Nehemiah had come, and he had helped rebuild the wall, and then he went back to the king for a time. And some see that during that time that he had gone back, that that's when Malachi ministers. We don't really know. But because of these different, this information that's in the book of Malachi, we date it somewhere around 432 to 425 BC. And that's an approximate date. There are some that are outside of that. But that's, you know, it gives us an idea of when it took place. As I mentioned, it occurred approximately 100 years, or he writes his ministry occurs approximately 100 years after the exiles returned. And here's what's kind of the setting, if you can get the feel for this. Now, they had been judged by the Lord, taken into exile. The Lord in His mercy, and had prophesied about this through Jeremiah, had allowed them to return back into the land. But here was their expectation. They fully expected that the Messiah would come on the scene. He would deliver them from bondage. He would set up His kingdom, and that they would be exalted as God's chosen people upon the earth, and all of the other nations would bow down to them. And that was their expectation. But that had not happened. In fact, some 100 years had gone by since they had returned, and it still had not happened. And they were disappointed. I just simply say that sometimes when you get disappointed, you have to be careful. When things don't work the way that you think they should work or you expect them to work, you have to be careful that you don't become disillusioned. And they at this point had really become disillusioned, and they had kind of gotten to the point where they were worshiping, but they were somewhat indifferent to their worship. We would say they were dotting the I's and crossing the T's, going through all the form and ritual of worshiping, but their hearts really were not in what was taking place. And the Lord knew that. And He raises up this man Malachi to be able to address the heart issues of the people of Israel at this time of her history. The author, it just simply says, the burden of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi. The word Melech or Malach is the idea of the angel or the messenger. Literally the name means my messenger or my angel. Some even interpret this as more of a title or a designation of office rather than a personal name of a prophet. But I think when you study it all out, even though it doesn't quite fit the normal form of what you would expect, a better interpretation, the best interpretation, is that indeed this was a prophet, and his name sort of was in connection with his message or with his burden that God had given to him. And so the idea of my messenger, my angel, who's going to bring this message. Keep in mind, as we study the book of Malachi, that this is the last Old Testament prophet. And there's going to be a period of silence, as we sometimes term it, that for 400 years, the Lord is not going to raise up another prophet. The next prophet that's going to be raised up is John the Baptist. And so if you can think of this as a final message, maybe you've been near someone, perhaps a grandfather or a grandmother, or maybe even a parent that's getting to the end of his years, the end of his days. And his voice is not very strong, almost a whisper. You can barely even hear it. And there's something that he wants to say. And you get close to his mouth so that you can hear exactly what he's trying to say, because this is the last time you're going to hear him speak. But there's almost that sense about this book. This is the last time that God is going to speak for some 400 years. And so that message becomes important for us as we think about the book of Malachi. The theme. Malachi is a reformer. He's basically burdened about what we might call the honor of God. His people had been taken captive. They had been brought into exile. They had returned back from exile. They had been reestablished in the land. They had rebuilt the altar. They had rebuilt the temple. And they were expecting great glory days in the future. But those days had not come. And they had become somewhat disillusioned. And the Lord and God and His presence and all of that had lost a little bit of His glimmer for them. And they were not really treating God according to who He was, to being God. And what happens in this particular book is Malachi is going to redirect the hearts and thinking of the people so that they recognize what they're doing and what's taking place. And he's going to call them forth in a reviving sort of way, that they might turn their focus back unto the Lord and acknowledge Him for who He is, and that they might give Him the honor that's due His name. That's Malachi's burden. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Now, he uses an interesting style, and you'll see this coming up over and over again as we look at the book. He uses a style that some call rhetorical disputation. There is an assertion. Then there is a question about that assertion, and then there is a response to that question, and then there is an implication. And let me show you what I'm talking about. Look in chapter 1, verse 2. He says, I have loved you, saith the Lord. That's the assertion. So he's acknowledging his love for Israel. They respond by questioning that. They say, yet ye say, that little phrase, yet ye say, that'd be a good one to underline or underscore or highlight as you go through this book. You're going to see it a lot in this book. It's God speaking for them, sort of sharing what their heart is really thinking or feeling, and trying to help bring all of this to the surface so that when we get a sense of understanding of how they're struggling and what they're going through, he's pinpoint, yet ye say, and here's what they say, wherein hast thou loved us? They're questioning or doubting in what manner or what way that God had showed them that He loved them. Then there's a response. God responds by saying, was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith the Lord, yet I love Jacob. So there's this sort of back and forth kind of thing going on between the Lord and the people of Israel, and he's using this particular approach to bring all of this to the surface so the Lord can deal with the heart issues that the people are struggling with. The last part, the implication, you have to go down to verse 5, where it says, "And your eyes shall see, and ye shall say, the Lord will be magnified from the border of Israel." And he's talking about a future event that's going to take place, that's going where the Lord's name is going to be magnified. And all that he's been teaching them and telling them is going to be very evident to all. And this pattern is all throughout this book. You will have this statement, this question, this response, and this implication. And really, as we've divided the book up, we're just going to kind of follow those different, there are actually six of them, where they're disputing, if you would. There's this back and forth thing that's taking place. He kind of concludes the book by what we might think of as a day of reckoning, ultimate day of reckoning that's going to come. And there's lots of implications, not only for Old Testament, but even into New Testament days, and even to what we might call the end times that are implied as he closes out this particular book. One of the statements I found, I read it several places, but I gave the quotation here, kind of interesting information. Wilkerson and Boas said it this way, of the 55 verses in Malachi, only 55 verses, 47 of them are spoken by God. And they go on to say the highest proportion of all the prophets. So out of all the verses, the 55 verses that are there, 47 of them, God is speaking directly. Which kind of tells you that what he has to say in this book is pretty important and you really want to listen to what he's saying. Okay? Now, you can see the outline. I won't go through that, but I do want to go down to the application. I want to go back before I do that to look at chapter 1, verse 1. In chapter 1, verse 1, it simply says, "The burden of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi." Now, we've already talked a little bit about Malachi being a prophet, the last prophet of the Old Testament. He says, "Of the word of the Lord to Israel." The term Israel is used in several ways throughout the Old Testament. Sometimes it's used for the northern 10 tribes, and we have Israel, and then we have the southern 2 tribes that we call Judah. Okay? But frequently, it's also used generically, Israel, for all of Israel or for all of the Jewish community. And that's really how it's used here. There's not a distinction necessarily made between the north and the south. It's just speaking of Israel. So this is a prophet. Malachi is a prophet that has been raised up by the Lord to address the heart issues of the people that are living in that day that had been disillusioned and discouraged and had kind of gotten to the point where they were going through all the motions of worshiping God, all the rituals of worshiping God, but their hearts really weren't in it. And they were not giving God the proper worth or duty or honor that was due him because of who he is and because of his name. Now, the word burden is probably a key as we think about this book. Okay, this is a little word. It comes from another word that has the idea of lifting up or carrying something. Some more modern translations take the word declaration or oracle, speaking of a proclamation almost. But that doesn't really seem to fit really the whole sense of the word. It has more the idea of something kind of like a weight, if you would, that has been laid upon the prophet Malachi. He's weighed down by it. If you've ever been involved in ministry, particularly in a preaching kind of ministry, quite often this is really what you do every week. There's a burden that God lays upon your heart, and it becomes quite heavy sometimes. And you feel weighed down by it all because it's a message that God has burned in your own soul that he wants you to deliver or declare to his people. And there's that sense here where this is something that has been given to Malachi that is weighing him down, that he is going and really required of the Lord to proclaim to the people of the Lord. And the idea of this whole sense of burden is, all right, it's a burden that God gave to Malachi. And he bears it in his soul and in his heart. And as he proclaims his message, what happens is the burden is transferred from Malachi to the people. Really, as a preacher, that's what you do every week. You transfer that burden. And really, what God is wanting us to do as we study this book, as we think about this message and the truths that are found throughout these chapters, God is wanting us to take up the burden that God had given to Malachi, and what was Malachi's burden, that it becomes our burden. That we're in earnest about it. This is something that is weighs upon our hearts heavily, that we don't easily dismiss or just sort of push ourselves away from as if it's really not that important. No, these are the words of the Lord. It says, the burden of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi. So for the very fact that these are the words of the Lord that have been given to this prophet that was raised up at a very key time in the history of Israel, and this weightiness, this heaviness, if you would, that had been given to him, what God is wanting us to do as we think about this book, as we meditate upon this book, as we study in this book, he's wanting the burden of Malachi to become our burden. And if we will grasp the burden that God gave to Malachi of God's worth and God's honor and God's value, and then that in turn is contrasted with the heart issues that were there among the children of Israel, which are the same heart issues that we often have, and God begins to speak to us and he begins to lay that burden upon us, that we get burdened about the name of the Lord, the reputation of the Lord, the honor of the Lord, and giving him what is rightfully due his. Now let's look lastly at this idea of the application. The prophet Malachi reminds God's people of the privileges the Lord has extended to them. He wants his people to respond in keeping with his nature and with his character. You know, the same thing was true in Malachi's day is true today. We have a response to God tonight. We're to sort of, as best as we're able to assess God and to evaluate who he is and to understand what he's like, his nature, his character. And then the heart response that we have is to be in keeping with who God is. In other words, if you have a great person, you're in the presence of a great person, then you treat that person in accordance with his greatness. And that's certainly true of the Lord. And God's wanting us, as we think about our own heart relationships and our own response to God, is to try to get an understanding of who God is and then how we respond to him. Do we respond proportionally to the greatness of our God? And you're going to see that theme driven over and over and over again in this book. In short, God wants his people to revere and to honor him. Now, think about this. Here's a little nation that has been brought back from exile, that is almost just a non-existent, groveling along, barely making it in life. The Messiah has not come. The hope and the promises that they had expected had not happened. Their nose is down. They're disheartened. They're discouraged. And they've kind of lost God in all of this. And the Lord is coming on the scene by this man Malachi, and he's trying to refocus their thinking, refocus their heart, and help them to understand who God is, and that he is a great God, and that one day all of those promises and all of those prophecies and all of those things that have been said are going to happen. And Israel is going to be at the very center of what happens. And he's trying to lift their chin and help them understand that he hasn't abandoned them. He hasn't forsaken them. He's very much, his timetable is right, it precisely happening as he's planned it. And that ultimately one day they will see the fruition of all of that. God desires, and this is one of the things I think we can draw from this book, much more than external conformity to his requirements. Most of us, we've been to church so much, we could go to church backwards. You know what I mean by that? I mean, you know, there's a certain way. I mean, you know, you have a certain way you do things. If I were to talk to some men tonight, you know, there's a certain way, you know, when you shower and you have an order, you do things. You know, you may comb your hair, you may shave next. I mean, there's a certain order that you do it. After a while, you could almost do it in your sleep. In fact, most of the time you do it in your sleep. You know? Same thing with Christianity. After a while, we know all the words. We know how to say it just the right way. We even know how to hold our Bible just the right position. Yeah. We've got all the phrases down and we know how to do it. We know how to dot the I's and cross the T's, and we've done it so much that we don't really have to think about it. But what can happen is we become a little disillusioned, and we can become a little what we might call automated. In the sense that we just sort of conform. And one of the things that had happened in the lives of the people, they were going through the rituals. They were offering the sacrifices. They were doing all the things they were supposed to do. But their heart really wasn't in it. God desires a people whose heart fully follows Him. He wants their best, not the leftovers. In fact, I won't get too much into this, but chapter 1, he really takes them to task because they were giving Him sacrifices, but the sacrifices they were giving Him were kind of the leftovers. There were the lame and the blind and those that they didn't really want, and they were withholding the best sacrifices for themselves. And the Lord really rebukes them. In fact, if you notice in verse 14 of chapter 1, it says, "But cursed be the deceiver which hath in his flock a male and voweth and sacrifices unto the Lord a corrupt thing." And he ends this chapter by saying, "For I am a great king, saith the Lord of hosts, and my name is dreadful or awesome among the heathen." He's very concerned about the fact they recognize he's a great king and that they treat him accordingly. And he takes them to task when they do not do that. As I end up saying here, anything short of complete total dedication to the Lord dishonors Him. He is a great God who deserves our wholehearted worship and praise. And this book, as we work our way through it and as we study through it, is going to call you from a point of lethargy. It's going to call you from a point of just sort of going through the rituals and the routines of walking with God to a vibrant walk where you are wholeheartedly, totally engaged in what you're doing and you're understanding and acknowledging God for who He is and you're exalting Him and praising Him and worshiping Him with a full heart. And anything short of that will not satisfy Him, will not please Him. So I think you're going to find as we work our way through the book of Malachi, it's a very, very convicting book that doesn't allow you to sort of sit back in your seat and just get comfortable. There's a sense of urgency, and that word burden has a sense of urgency about it. There's a seriousness about the walk that He's calling His people to, and nothing short of a wholehearted, full commitment to God will honor and please Him. And as He says in the end of this chapter, chapter 1, He says, "For I am a great king, saith the Lord of hosts, and my name is dreadful among the heathen." In other words, He's acknowledging His greatness, and He wants us to acknowledge His greatness as well. So, do this, will you? Take some time to read this book this week. Between now and next week, and if you want to almost follow what we're going to cover, if you just look at the outline, the next Wednesday night, we're going to cover chapter 1, verses 2 to 5. If you don't read anything else, read chapter 1, verses 2 to 5. Study those verses. Think about those verses. Think about what they're saying. Think about the application to your life. And then follow week by week by week by week. So that as we kind of see this whole book laid out before us, what happens is it begins to challenge us about our walk with God. And whether we truly understand who God is and acknowledging Him for who He is and that we truly give Him the honor that is due His name, because that's exactly what He's wanting from us.